This is module 4 of the course, the Hardware Roadmap from Idea to Manufacturing. And in module 4, we're going to be looking at the prototyping stage. The first step of the prototyping stage, or step 12 in the overall process, is to prototype the printed circuit board. Prototyping a printed circuit board consists of two separate steps. The first step is to fabricate the board itself. So without any of the components, this would just be the stacked up layers that make up the PCB board, whether that be 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 layers. Then obviously all the signal traces connecting everything. And then is the landing pads for each of the components that will be soldered onto the board. That's the first step, is to produce the empty PCB. The second step is the actual assembly of the board. And this shouldn't be confused with assembly of the overall product. This is just assembly of the PCB board itself, basically soldering all the components onto the board. There are different ways you can go about this. First, one option that isn't really feasible for most projects is to do this yourself. You could potentially purchase the empty boards and then solder on all the components yourself. And this can be one, if you're good at soldering and your design is quite simple and it doesn't include any leadless components, then this may be a viable option for you to do the soldering yourself, because the board assembly is going to be the most expensive part of the process of having a board prototyped. You could do that as a possibility to do it yourself, but that's very rare and not something I recommend, because then if there's a problem with the design, you're going to be questioning whether it's a bad solder joint, was something done incorrectly in the assembly process, and so you're going to be second guessing yourself. It's much better, I feel, to outsource the PCB production, both the board itself and the assembly process. And then that just eliminates any complications in debugging as far as being concerned about the quality of the board assembly itself. And secondly, eventually you're going to have the boards mass produced. The method that's used for producing prototypes when you purchase them from a prototype company is the same procedure that's used for production. You're going to have to go this route eventually. The earlier you transition to the production process, I feel like the better off you are. If you're going to outsource your PCB production, then you have two options. You could either do it domestically or you could do it offshore, likely in Asia. And previously, I almost always recommended that you do PCB prototyping domestically, but because of the limited budgets that so many entrepreneurs are dealing with, and because of the availability of more reputable, well-known Chinese or Asian-based prototyping companies, I now feel for most people, I think that outsourcing it to an Asian production or Asian prototype company is going to be your best option. The main reason being that the cost. Prototypes of PCB, especially the PCB, the board assembly, can be quite expensive. And if you order prototypes from, say, a U.S. company, you can easily be into the $1,000 to $2,000 range. So, and you have to keep in mind that you're going to require multiple iterations of the prototype. This cost of $1,000 to $2,000 is going to be multiplied probably by two to three times at least. It can be very cost beneficial to have the PCB board production done in Asia. The one downside is the shipping time. It's a little more, there's going to be a little more logistics to get the boards to you, but I feel like that's very minor. I don't think for most projects a day or two here and there is going to really make any significant impact. I would advise that you, most likely that you go using an Asian prototype company. Some of them that I have experience with are Seed Studio. They do both production, they do prototyping, they do PCB prototyping and 3D printing. They offer a wide suite of services, prototype and production. PCB Way is another Asian PCB manufacturer that I have experience with that I can recommend. And then Bitaly is another one. They are actually headquartered in Canada, but they have their manufacturing facility in China. That's another good option. And then Sunstone is a U.S. company that I've used quite a bit in the past. They're going to be a lot more expensive than Seed, PCBWay, or Bitaly. But if you're looking for really high quality boards done domestically in the US, then definitely check out Sunstone Circuits. When prototyping your PCB, you need to start with very small numbers your first revision, 3 to 5 units. You don't want to go any higher than that, because most likely there's going to be some issues with your first revision. You don't want to produce 10 boards. You don't typically need that. Start with 3 to 5, evaluate those, fix any problems, then iterate your prototype again. And you can, each time you iterate your prototype, you can ramp up the volume. The first time may be 3 to 5 units. The second time you may do 5 to 7 units, and then the third time you maybe do 10 units. Just start small and ramp your way up each time you iterate, and your confidence level that the boards will be usable increases, then you can increase the number of prototypes that you order each time. This is an overview of prototyping the PCB board. Next, in step 13, we're going to be looking at prototyping your enclosure. In step 13, we're going to be looking at prototyping the enclosure or the case for your product or any other custom plastic parts required for your product. There are different technologies used for prototyping the enclosure or any custom shaped plastic parts. The most common is going to be 3D printing. And you're probably familiar with 3D printing. It's an additive process. That means that the part is built by adding layer upon layer of molten resin until it forms the final product. That's the most common prototyping method. It tends to be the simplest, the most widespread, the cheapest to do. It has quite a few negatives with it. The first being that it's built layer by layer. It's a different process entirely than your production units will be, which is injection molding. Therefore, the units are going to look different. They're not going to have the same finish as your in a high quality appearance as the final product or the final production part will have. So 3D printing, the resins that it uses aren't the same plastic that will be used in the production part. A lot of things will feel different, how, you know, pieces snap together or how strong things are, the flexibility. Those will all be different in your 3D printed prototype versus the production. But it's usually it's the best place to start for your first prototypes, because it's the kind of the simplest and the most common. So start with 3D printing, iterate with that until you've gotten all the information that you can out of 3D printing, and then you'll want to transition up to next level of prototyping technology. That next level may be CNC machining. And you may want to start with this instead of 3D printing, but I think most products are best started with 3D printing. And then if the plastic material itself is really critical, let's say you have snap fits and you need to get them just right so they snap together, they don't come apart real easily, but when it so snaps together that it makes it so difficult that you can't snap it. If you need to test things like that, then look at CNC machining. And CNC machining is a subtractive process. That means it starts with a solid block of production plastic. So this would be the same plastic you would use when you're mass producing your part. It starts with a block of that, and then you remove away the plastic or sculpt it basically to form the shape of your part. It's a subtractive. You start with more material than what you'll end up with, and then you're just like carving away or sculpting away. This can be a good transition. It's not going to be for high volume. It's not going to look like a production product as much as some of the other methods that we'll look at, but it's definitely a good step to take after 3D printing if the plastic itself is important for your product. The next option we're going to look at is urethane casting. The first two tend to be for low volumes. 3D printing, CNC machining, you may do, you know, 3, 5, 6, 7 units, typically less than 10 units that you'll use for those. But like I said, they don't produce parts that are going to look as nice as the production part. So the challenge is getting production parts. You don't want to have to do injection molding, because that's going to have a really expensive upfront cost, injection molding, for the cost of the molds. Urethane casting is a nice intermediate way of getting parts that are molded parts that will look closer to your production parts and have the same finish as the production parts, but yet they don't have the the complicated or expensive mold requirements. Urethane casting, it starts off by, first of all, you take a 3D printed version of your part or a CNC machine version of it. That's how it starts. Then they take that and they basically, using that, they build a mold out of silicone. Silicone's relatively is soft, rubbery. They build a mold that's out of silicone using your 3D printed part. You will end up with a mold that has a cavity in it. First of all, the mold's made out of silicone and it will have a cavity that's the shape of your part. Then they can put urethane in that mold and form molded parts of your product that are made out of urethane. You'll see this called urethane casting, silicone casting, vacuum casting, because they use a vacuum instead of high pressure like an injection mold. They use a vacuum to pull the material into the mold and make sure that it, you know, fills in all the nooks and crannies. It accurately reproduces the part. That can be a really good option to transition from prototype, but you need some samples, high quality samples to show customers, but you don't yet want to spend thousands on injection molding. Then urethane casting is a good intermediate step. Once again, as with the PCB prototypes, I mean, you do have the option of should you use a professional prototype shop or should you try to do this at home? Well, first of all, CNC machining isn't going to be feasible. I don't know of any at-home CNC milling machines. And I don't believe urethane casting is going to be practical to do at home. The one that is practical is 3D printing, because you can buy at-home 3D printers now relatively low cost. And that can be really beneficial, especially in the early stages of your prototyping, because it allows you to iterate really quickly. You can produce a prototype, test it out, hold it in your hand, get a feel for it, make the changes to your 3D model, then within minutes or hours, you can have an updated model. And that allows you to iterate really quickly and you can make a lot of progress. That's one of the fastest ways to get through development is to iterate a lot, iterate your prototype a lot, and that can be a way to speed it up. That tends to also add a lot of cost to the development process also, but if you have your own printer at home, then that becomes much more economical. If you do decide to have a professional prototype shop do it, then you could either, once again, you could either go Asia or domestic, and each has its advantages, just like with the PCB prototypes. If you do it domestic, you'll have it shipped to you much quicker, and that allows you to iterate much quicker. I find with the enclosure, it becomes a little more beneficial to be able to iterate really quickly compared to the PCB, because the PCB iteration tends to take a lot of time to figure out the fixes and the problems for the next iteration. You don't benefit quite as much with PCB prototyping if you do that at home yourself as you will with prototyping your enclosure. If you do decide, you know, to use a prototype shop, either from the very beginning or after you've gotten as much information as you can from 3D printing your prototype using your at-home 3D printer, perhaps you need to upgrade to either a better 3D printer or a CNC machine or urethane casting, then at that point you may want to upgrade and switch over to a professional prototype shop. And some that I've used are Seed Studio. Again, I mentioned them before. They do PCB prototypes, PCB production, 3D printing. They have a wide variety of prototype and production services. Proto Labs is a company here in the U.S. that I've used quite a bit in the past that can produce both prototype parts, and then they also do low volume injection molding. That can be a good option for you after you've done the urethane casting and now you need maybe hundreds or thousands of parts, because urethane casting is only good for about 20 to 25 parts because the silicone molds are so soft and not very durable, so they don't last but more than, you know, 20 shots or so. And then ICO mold is another one that I've used successfully in the past. This is a review of everything that's the different strategies that you have for prototyping your enclosure. Next, we're going to be getting these prototypes back and evaluating them. In step 14, we're going to look at evaluating the printed circuit board prototypes. And then finally, in step 15, we'll look at evaluating the enclosure design or enclosure prototypes. Now it's time to finally begin evaluating your prototypes. In the previous steps, we looked at ordering or prototyping both your PCB and your enclosure. And now in step 14, we're going to be looking at evaluating the PCB prototypes once you get those back. The first thing to keep in mind is no design is perfect the first time. I've never seen a product go to that full production or make it to market on the very first version. That's just not feasible or practical. Don't count on that or don't anticipate that happening. There's always going to be some type of small issue that's going to pop up in your evaluation. It doesn't matter how careful you are, how many design reviews you have up front, how good the designer is. The odds are very high that there's going to be at least some minor issues with the first version, and likely the second and perhaps the third. It depends on the complexity of the product itself. These revisions and tweaks are always necessary. You just have to plan for it. It's going to require multiple iterations. What will happen is you order the prototype, the PCB prototypes, you get them back, you evaluate them, you identify any problems that you found. Then you have to come up and figure out solutions, design changes you want to make to fix those problems that were discovered. You'll go back, update the schematic or revise the schematic design, perhaps revise your BOM, revise your PCB layout with these changes, order new prototypes, and then begin the evaluation process again. And that will repeat over and over until you finally get prototypes that are completely bug-free. One thing that can be really helpful is don't wait until you get your PCB prototypes, you have them on your desk, and then you begin thinking about, okay, what do I want to test other than the most basic function? Beforehand, before you even get your prototypes back, it's really wise if you could take the time to come up with a test and evaluation plan. Just list out all the different characteristics of the part that you want to test, and have that written out ahead of time, so that when you get the parts, then you'll be much more efficient with your evaluation because you've already thought about all the things that you want to verify. That's a much better procedure or much better strategy to follow than just winging it and just testing things as you think of them once you get the product. So definitely always try to plan up front for a lot of steps, and that's always going to make your time more efficiently used. I find that this step, the evaluation, debug, and then iterating the prototype, that is the most difficult part of this entire process to forecast. And that's because you're dealing with unknowns. If you knew the problems that were going to exist in your prototypes, then you would never design them to be in there in the first place. You would have solved these problems. By its very nature, when you're prototyping and evaluating and finding any problems, those problems were unknown to you. Because you're dealing with unknowns, it becomes really difficult to forecast that. Not only do you not know the problems that you're going to find yet, but you also don't know the solutions. So you'll likely find some simple problems that have simple solutions, but you may run into a problem that has a complex solution that's going to take you considerable time to figure out a workaround for. That's just another unknown that's introduced into the process. Just be really aware of the fact that time can really start adding up when it's the evaluation and debug phase. And this is true regardless if you're just an entrepreneur or you're a large tech company. When I was a designer at TI, this is where projects would always fall behind because problems would come up that we weren't expecting, and it would just take us time to find those problems and to come up with solutions for them. This is where most projects tend to fall behind schedule. Just keep that in mind. Also keep in mind that the more complicated the product, the more involved this process is going to be, the more iterations that are going to be required before you can get the product ready for market. And this is true if you have really complex circuits like custom wireless or audio circuits or a custom fast microprocessor with external RAM memory, that you had to route a data and address bus. These are some of the things that I'd mentioned in the PCB layout step that add complexity to a PCB layout. These things just will also affect this process. The more complicated the the design, the more likely there's going to be problems. And the more difficult it is to for a complex product finding problems, that the problems tend to be more complex as well. The solutions are more complex. So it all just adds more and more time to the process. Just keep that in mind if you have really complicated products, and always try to do whatever you can to simplify your product. That's a huge benefit if you can simplify your product in, you know, every way possible. This is a benefit from the minimum viable product standpoint. But from even evaluating your design and getting iterating and getting all the bugs worked out, it's going to be much better if you can either use like pre-certified existing tested solutions for wireless or a microprocessor. And the final tip is just do not rush through evaluation. The one thing you do not want to do is have problems get through your evaluation and make it to production, because it is a million times easier to fix a problem when you're still in the development phase than it is before you make it to production. I mean, that's a nightmare scenario, is if you have to make design changes after you've started production. You definitely don't want to do that. But you don't even want to rush and do your next prototype, because prototypes are expensive. You want to make sure that you've fully evaluated the prototypes that you have, that you've gotten every bit of information that you can from those prototypes before you iterate to the next prototype. Unless this happens to be something like 3D printing, you have an at-home 3D printer, and in that case, that's something you can iterate really quickly without a big expense. In that case, that's something that's beneficial to iterate quickly. But overall, just don't rush through the process. Make sure you very meticulously evaluate your prototypes before moving on to the next step. And finally, we are at step 15, and this is to evaluate your enclosure prototypes and then revise as needed. Finally, you get to finally feel your product in your hand, and that's going to be a really exciting moment. Up until this point, you've only seen it most likely as a 3D model, and there's limited information you can get from looking at a 3D model. It's exciting and really enlightening as far as your product once you finally get to hold it in your hand. If appearance is critical for your product, then expect that you're going to need a lot of iterations to get things just right. And it's also just the entire process of developing the enclosure is going to be a lot more complicated if appearance is critical. And that's because appearance is difficult to convey. It's qualitative, not quantitative. It requires a lot of back and forth between you and the 3D model designer. Just keep that in mind, that if appearance is critical, it's just going to add a lot of complexity to the entire process of developing and manufacturing your enclosure. Once you have finalized you'll start with 3D printing, and once you've finalized the early stages of your prototype, basically you've gotten as much information as you can with 3D printing, then what you want to do is you want to transition up the different levels or different types of prototype technology, because each has advantages at different stages of the prototype development process. Start with 3D printing because that's the simplest and typically the cheapest. Then if the plastic material for your product is really critical, snap fits and things like that, then you may want to transition up to CNC machining, which allows you to use the same plastic that will be used in production, versus 3D printing resins, which are just made to simulate production plastics but are still quite a bit different. Then once you've got the prototype, you know, right, you've got things like your snap fits and all that working good, but now you're ready to, you need some samples to show customers. Well, in most cases, 3D printed prototypes aren't going to be, they'll look like a prototype. They're not going to look like a production product. I find that CNC machining tends to look better than 3D printing, but still it's not going to have the finish and the appearance of the final product. Urethane casting is a good option for once you're ready to, you've got the prototype design mostly done, but now you need some samples, high quality samples to show customers. Urethane casting is a good intermediate technology that allows you to produce 20 to 25 parts per mold. Obviously, you can make multiple molds, but with urethane castings, they use a silicone mold, And they're soft, you know, rubbery-like materials. It just has a very limited lifespan. You can get about 20 to 25 parts out of it. Then finally, once you've gotten samples using urethane castings, and you've been able to present those to customers, and you've got hopefully orders or at least interest from customers or investors. But whatever the case may be, once you've gotten enough confirmation of the product that you're ready to step it up and perhaps not go full mass production, but maybe now you need hundreds of parts instead of just 20 parts. And ultimately, you're going to need samples that are going to be exactly like the production units that you'll be making in the future. And the only way to get exactly production units is to use injection molding. That should be the last step, because injection molding is expensive to have the molds made, and it's the most difficult to change. You don't want to spend thousands of dollars on a mold and then realize that you need to make some changes to it. Which you can make changes to molds as long as the changes are removing material from the mold, so therefore adding a feature or something else to your product's enclosure. But you can't add material back to the mold, which is the case if you wanted to remove a feature from your part. Then that would require adding material to the mold, and you can't do that. Just make sure you try to get all the bugs worked out before you switch to injection molding. And once you do switch to injection molding, as I always advocate, start simple and then take small steps up from there. For instance, start with a single cavity aluminum mold once you're ready for injection molding. A single cavity just means that mold makes one copy of your part each time it's injected with plastic. That's the simplest you can do is just having a single cavity or one cavity. Aluminum for the mold is important because it drastically lowers the cost of the mold, because aluminum, as you probably know, is a lot softer than steel, but it just makes the mold easier to manufacture, because molds are machined using, you know, CNC machining. So machining away or sculpting away aluminum is much easier, takes less time than it does to do that with steel. Start with a single cavity aluminum mold. And those can be good for thousands of units, even up to maybe 10,000 or more units you can get from aluminum molds. Start there. Then as your production volumes increase, then you transition to steel. There are different grades of steel, so you can go up harder and harder steels. They'll have a longer lifetime, but they'll also have a higher cost. So just don't take big steps. Don't go from a single cavity aluminum to a 8 cavity high grade steel mold. That's too big of a step. And once you migrate to steel molds, so you have more durability, the mold can produce more parts before it you know, ultimately fails. But you can also increase the number of cavities. And increasing the number of cavities basically acts to lower the cost of each part. So it just takes less time. If each time they inject plastic in the mold, out comes 2 parts or 4 parts instead of 1. It just increases the cycle time, or speeds up the cycle time, and therefore lowers the part cost. Increasing the number of cavities is a good strategy for lowering your production cost, but don't rush to do that. Don't worry so much in the early days about optimizing every penny of profit. That can come later with economies of scale and where you can do things like increase the number of cavities, but that all adds to the upfront cost. And in the early stages, you need to always focus on minimizing your upfront cost and not on maximizing unit profit. Okay, this was the final step of the hardware roadmap from idea to manufacturing for your product. These 15 steps will get your product ready for the manufacturing process. There are still other steps that I've not covered that are required for setting up manufacturing. We've not talked really about that too much. There are electrical certifications that you'll need, FCC certification, UL certification, CE. There are different ones that will be required to bring your product to market, but those are not required for small cells like tests. If you're up to producing 20 units with the urethane casting, and you're wanting to use those to give to customers or even use to do a cells test, those don't, you don't have to have those electrically certified. And even if you transition to a mold, injection molding, and you know are making 100 or 200 units for a cells test, you typically don't have to have any electrical certifications for that type of cells test. Those are required once you scale up and are doing mass production. I hope you found this course useful. This has been an overview of all the 15 steps to go from idea to manufacturing for your new hardware product. I'm John Teal with the Hardware Academy, and I hope you have a great day.